20441.
Is one from the company calling in?
No, they don't get, I mean, they can listen, but is Brian on? Do you know if Brian's going to be participating? Okay. All right. All right, thank you, Matt. This is Julie Fedorchak. It is about 10:34 on Wednesday, the 24th of February. We're gathered in the commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the Capitol for a work session on the XL Energy Electric Rate Increase, case number 20-441. I'm in the hearing room. My colleague Randy Christman, Commissioner Randy Christman, is also in the hearing room. And joining us up by phone is Commissioner Brian Crotchus. I don't have any opening comments. Do you, Commissioner Christman?
Nor do I, thank you.
Okay, so then, Brian, I'm going to turn it over to you, if you're comfortable with that, since this is your portfolio, and you can set the stage for us. And if you want to lead the discussion, great. If you want to kick it back over to us in the room to lead the discussion, I'm fine with that. We can handle it however you prefer.
Okay, thank you. I did talk to Jack just prior to the meeting and gave him a heads up on helping lead the discussion since I'm remote. And I think he will start on some comments, and then we'll hear from Pat as well. I believe the plan we came up with, and then questions can ensue as we go through it.
Sounds great.
All right, just to get us teed off, just as you all recall, this is a policy that the commission is starting to do again as well. We haven't done it a whole lot in the past few years, but this is really an opportunity. If there's anything that you would like to direct staff to focus on, specifically to work with advocacy staff in the company to ensure that the item or issue is fully fleshed out, feel free to kind of tee it up. And sometimes some of these might be already addressed in the exhibits, but it would allow us and advocacy staff to make sure this abundantly clear and addressed in the manner that you would like it to be addressed by rate case time. And also, it's an opportunity for you to provide some sentiment in how you would like the proceeding to actually go regarding specific issues that you would like to see outside of settlement or to the degree you would like to see a settlement at all. With the filing of this case, as you know, it's been a while coming. We haven't had a rate case in a while, so of course, there are a lot of issues in this one and a lot of things to focus on. And like I said, I know advocacy staff will be digging into all of it. But if there is really something you'd like them to provide a focused exhibit on or evaluation on, this would be a great opportunity to give that direction inside of a meeting. So I think we haven't had the opportunity to discuss it. We just didn't have quite as much time as we would have hoped, advisory staff. But I know we all individually went through the items. And I think I'll just pass it over for my brief discussion with Pat to start the discussion off of what's been provided and his initial thoughts.
Sure, unless the commissioners want to start out, I can bring up some of the things that I've found from like public input, consumer complaints. Why the AARP has intervened, what they've said in their intervention request, what Walmart has said in their intervention request, and maybe some of the things that we talked about with the MDU rate case. We would want, commissioners might want to do some of the same things in this case, so.
Sounds good. Do you have some specific things you want to outline, Randy?
Well, I'd rather hear those and then see if there's, I don't have a lot, but I'll just add to it if they're not on there.
All right.
Pat can probably explain them better in shorter time than I would.
Sure, and I do have some thoughts as well, but I can save mine for after yours, too.
Sure. Okay. So in looking through the public input so far, what I've noticed mostly is that people are concerned about the impact of an increase during the pandemic and, you know, at this time. And also concerns about fixed income, people that are on fixed income and people that are older. I think that 50 plus is what they've been saying, that it's going to have a special impact on them. Consumer complaints. Also in the public input, there was a mention of frequent outages in the summer in Fargo area.
Oh.
And
did that emphasize last summer, or is that more of a historical complaint?
This was, I should have written it. No, it's there were outages in 2020 and 2019.
Okay.
If you remember, there were some pretty severe storms in this past summer,
right,
that did leave a good portion of Fargo without power while they're getting it up and moving again.
Right. There was in 2019 there was the 2020 outage. At least the one was described as just a long power outage. And the one in 2019 was described as a 16-hour power outage. Mm. And so, we could dig into the, outages that the company has had in those last few years. The advocacy staff could.
It's probably good to revisit that because mm-hmm. it has been a challenge for those customers in the past. And I feel like it's gotten better, but maybe that's not true.
Those are two pretty major outages.
Yeah.
And there might be a good, there might be weather-related incidents.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they could ask about them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we could maybe discuss those occurrences as well as what steps they've taken since those outages.
Well, and get an update because they had that report that, I forget the term, like,
Sadie and Safey.
Yes.
Stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Sadie and Safey. Our friends, Sadie and Safey. We could get an update on their performance in those, in regards to those kind of standards.
Outage measurements.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it also should be drilled down some too, because as I recall, that it's pretty generalized. And so, like a company that large could have very few outages for their size, but if it's the same handful of people that are getting them all the time, then there's areas that need work. Mm-hmm.
And Sadie and Safey, I think you have to meet a certain number of minutes before they're included in the indexes. And so, finding more about smaller outages might be interesting too.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And also in the consumer comments, we've had a concern about having to pay for renewable projects mandated by Minnesota. I don't know if the commissioners want to get into that.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on how you define mandated.
Yeah.
If it's like the commission mandated it or they're, because I know they're, I think they would have a simple answer to that, and that they're not, they've already exceeded the...
Right. That's just the word that was used in the consumer input.
Portfolio standard in Minnesota, and so they're, they've got the easy argument of saying it's all based on cost, which I do think we need to dig into, but...
And then another consumer input was Xcel's customer service in particular. This customer was from West Fargo, and he said that he's had terrible experience with their customer service.
Did he go ahead, is that a responsiveness to billing issues as opposed to the actual service of providing electricity, or any specifics?
No specifics that I can remember. And I didn't write them down either, so I think there weren't any specifics.
Yeah, they used to have a lot of issues with outages, companies, sales, stuff like that. Would have their
Put your microphone a little closer, would you please?
And And, you know, this was really some years ago when this was really bad. And they've done some work since then. So would probably be good to hear what they what they've done.
Definitely.
Say, Pat, when you say you don't have information written down, is that not written down in front of you right now or not written down at all?
Well, I just don't have anything written in my notes from when from the review that I did of the customer input. So I can go back and look to see if there was anything specific there.
Right. I think the point that Commissioner Crispin was making, or maybe it was Commissioner Fedorchuk or both, was I would want to know if it was because of an outage and their phone lines were flooded at the time, or if it's related to the billing system, getting an explanation on, you know, why is my bill, you know, higher than I thought, whatever it might be. That's important for me.
And also, just as a more immediate, if we have the name and number of this person, that strikes me as something that Stacy should be addressing and maybe not quite as relevant to the rate case as a whole. Because we don't see a huge trend of XL customers struggling with their customer service. We just looked at the numbers, and we've had very few calls. So,
if it's the one my recollection is there was remedial action to it by the company. So,
yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I just want to say on that, you know, every one of these complaints is important, but not everything is a significant part of a rate case.
Yeah.
You know, because a company this size, you're going to have an employee or just an odd situation where you do something wrong and you remediate it or correct it or do whatever it takes. We can't let that, you know, completely distract from an overall rate case. This is for more generalized trends, in my opinion.
Yeah, trends are important.
AARP's intervention spoke to substantial increase in rates to residential customers who are aged 50 or over.
Yep.
And then
fixed income folks.
Right. And Walmart's, in their request for intervention, they spoke to rate of return and cost of equity, appropriate expenses, and class cost of service studies and rate design.
Repeat those again, yeah. ROE.
ROE, well, ROR and ROE, and then expenses, like O&M expenses, distribution, versus and administrative, and class cost of service studies and rate design. And NSP says that there are no material changes in their rate design, so that must mean that Walmart has a concern about the existing rate design.
Mm-hmm.
And AARP.
Did Walmart in their materials, and this is more of a curiosity, I'll get to it when I read them, but did they express any opinions about the type of fleet they want to see? Did they get into that in this, like that they want to see the company, they support the company's quest for 100% renewables by 2050 or anything like that you noticed?
The very little bit of information in the case is in their intervention request, so there's really not a lot there yet.
I'll
there's no testimony yet.
All right.
It seems like there's not a lot that they left out of that list.
No, it's a rate case, all rate case issues. And so things that the commissioners asked for when we were talking about MDU's gas rate increase were a spreadsheet showing residential customer impact for low, medium, and high usage levels. Is that something that you'd be interested in this as well?
Sure. Showing the impact of the rate increase on those three categories of all customers?
Residential customer, low, medium, and high usage. If you want more, if you want impact to other customer classes, that could be included in that request as well.
A lot of the other customer classes are separated by usage levels, though.
Right.
They already.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful to get at some of the AARP issues.
Okay.
In particular.
And then long-term view of the most cost-effective and safest distribution system equipment and technology. That was something that you were interested in.
For the gas in particular. I don't think that applies quite as specifically here,
okay.
Although it does have some with demand response, you know, if they're getting into that arena.
Or their Aegis system that they're planning and
yes.
requesting notable capital expenditure. I mean, that's a pretty big technological change.
Yeah. They,
at least according to their application testimony, it seems like they are with a lot of different applications that they believe will provide benefits to the customers. So maybe that.
Sure.
Be some, that I mean, I'm sure that's something that advocacy staff will dig into because that is a major component. But
yeah.
Maybe just we can ask them to really focus on that specific issue and provide a recommendation.
I'm okay with that, you know, kind of specifically, but I do think it's more of a natural gas,
mm-hmm.
At least an MDU natural gas thing, because
there's,
you know, that the old
plastic pipe,
pipe and those kinds of issues that are, I don't think it completely carries over to this.
Right.
Okay, so I think, yes.
I'm sorry, if I could, this probably will be a little clunky as I interject, but going back to the low, medium, high usage customers on the residential side in particular, they can, of course, provide a breakdown based on usage. Do they have they been able to correlate? Have you seen anything in terms of usage by demographic? And here's the scenario that I'm thinking out loud. That you can have a 4,000 square foot home that can cost less, you know, new construction or fairly new construction, less than a 1,500, 2,000 square foot home because of insulation, et cetera, windows, that type of thing. Have you seen anything from the company that has some type of correlation between demographics and usage?
I have not. But is that something that you're interested in? To ask for the advocacy to ask about?
Yes, I would like to at least pose the question to see if they have any background information or data related to that, because again, just the scenario I listed, a medium usage customer may have a much smaller house than a low usage customer. So if they have something along those lines, I'd be very interested to see it.
Sure. I guess we can request it. I'm not sure to the extent they really have those a sociological evaluation of that, but that would actually be very, it would be useful if they had it, especially with AARP's intervention and concerns. From that note, we should maybe request that from AARP if they have any actual data in the area as well.
It's interesting. I've expressed this concern before about when we had this type of intervention from AARP, that I think a lot of times some of these older, smaller homes that we associate with low income and low usage of electricity might not really be low usage of electricity compared to larger homes. Exactly the point Brian was just making. But I never thought about, so how do you really look at that demographically? And It just popped into my mind now, though. Can the company lay out average usage by in larger cities by areas of town? You know, because I mean, there would be exceptions within a large area of town, but some of the some areas where the homes are just much larger square footage than some other older areas where homes just weren't built that big in those days. And I wonder if they can regionally kind of show the average usage like that.
I believe they could because of the billing. You know, they have the addresses in the computer. Mm-hmm. They have the usage in the computer and time of the year, you know, each month. So I believe that it could be done. I don't know how much work it would be.
Right, the difficulty aggregating it and staff you have available for
right.
such things. But
plus, you've got the variables of, you know, like some people in an efficient home might also have extra stuff that they're running, a hot tub, or they might just have their heat set higher or their air lower, their air conditioning lower, vice versa. That it would I think it would be hard to make assumptions based on just location. But maybe not. I mean, I appreciate trying to get at it. I sort of like the idea of asking AARP to provide information about their customers who are, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of demographics and usage could they provide to us about their XL customers.
Yeah. And they've generally come in with general statements, but they have never actually provided, I think, relative to that specific utility,
right.
any aggregated sociological data. So I'm not sure if that's... We can request it again. That doesn't mean it's available.
Well, it's important.
The opportunity to
yeah.
put together.
Because it will help us be able to appropriately discern their... the facts that they're asserting in their information as well, you know,
sure.
because they'll make statements about what kind of impact it has on their customer to the extent that they can back those up with data. That would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we don't have AARP testimony at this point either for this case.
I was wondering if we ever had them for electric.
We've not had them on an NSP case,
no.
that I can recall.
Sure.
No, so. Just MDU.
Yeah.
But they did MDU Electric, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't
and
think
they
it was
did,
just gas.
They did intervene
okay.
in this case, officially.
Yes.
So they plan to participate.
Sure.
Okay. What else, Pat?
Things that they mention and then talk about in their application that were more general in nature are they have something they call the steel for fuel strategy. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I did see that.
So you might, I don't know if you have questions about that, but then there's also, they talk a little bit about that commitment they had made to build generation in North Dakota, and then they also talk about their transition to carbon-free
mm-hmm.
Plan quite a bit.
I think they're serious about that one.
Yeah. So,
and then there are, of course, the big dollar issues that I haven't rattled off, but advocacy is already on those.
I might have, since you're talking about the carbon-free stuff, I'll interject on some of my concerns. And I haven't read through all the testimony or the advocacy staff testimony to know how this has been addressed already or if the filings already cover some of what I'm interested in knowing. But first of all, in general, I think it's important for us to always clarify that while the last rate case, the year was 2012, it hasn't been since 2012 that they've had a rate increase. The last actual rate increase was in 2016.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they have riders that have been used significantly since then. So, you know, I do recognize that now we're looking at resetting that base rate and taking some a good chunk of this request comes from the riders moving over from a rider to rate base, but they've been recovering a lot of the assets they've been investing in through the rider process, and they last had a rate increase in 2016, not 2012.
Sure,
so,
sure. Yeah.
That said, so the things that come to mind for me is this is the first time that we really get to review in depth the their requests to retire early the Sherco units and the depreciation changes that they're suggesting there and the impact to customers. So I really want to dig in on that. I don't know if the advocacy staff has already done that, but that is a focus that will be a big focus for me, the justification for that and what their plans are to replace those units. And specifically on that, on those units and their whole plan to go carbon free by 2050, and these components being a key piece of that, I would like to get from them information. I don't know if this is going to be like market sensitive information or not, but the run times of all of their dispatchable resources, coal, nuclear, and natural gas by plant from February 5th to February 18th of this year. And then I want to know, again, hopefully they're included in here already, but detailed replacement plans for those units. Especially the ones that are going that are on the chopping block here for early retirement. All of them won't be, obviously, but the ones that are. And then in that analysis, how I will have to dig into how is it more cost effective to retire those existing units that are nearly fully depreciated and then replace them with a brand new facility if that's what they're proposing to do. Always has been a big concern, and we've never had a chance to talk about it yet, and now it's an even greater concern after what we've just experienced. So those would be that on that category. And then the other big piece of information that I know I'll want to evaluate is now, since we gave the ADP to their big wind expansion plans, and that was predicated on cost savings to customers, I want to review the cost benefit of those wind investments. So the actuals, what they projected they were going to in the ADP process, and how they are tracking on those projections to date. Because I know not all of them maybe are up and running, but a good chunk of them are and have a couple years probably of data to show. And I expect that it would include their all-in costs, not just their, you know, cost of the turbines, but their all-in operations and maintenance, the capital costs, any transmission expansion costs that were related to those projects, anything else that is a cost of that project. So I think it's important to see how what the results are there. And I, ideally, and I don't know if this is a reasonable thing to ask, Adam might know better, but or Jerry, but is it possible to evaluate the performance of the system with the wind facilities in operation like they have been, and then to run a model that what it would have been without them? like if it had just run traditionally. Is that something you can do? So, no. Like, assume you didn't replace, didn't add all those wind facilities in. Could you take the system as it was prior to each of them being added on and run a model of how it would have operated and what the cost would have been to customers?
Like with cost modeling, I think that would be something we'd be able to do. Yeah. I'm not sure. Maybe Jerry can speak more to the.
Well, I think that they can, but there's going to be a lot of assumptions and stuff that they do in order to put together a program.
Right.
And so how would things have gotten dispatched?
Right.
And that kind of stuff. So, well, first of all, they're not going to want to do it.
No.
And,
of course not. But how do you get at what the benefits are if you can't look at what they would have been without it?
I think they can make something up.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and then it's up to us to dig in and see what their assumptions are fair or just done in their the most favorable light.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think that's a question that customers deserve to know the answer to. And we do. We should know that answer. I'm hoping that it's favorable because, we've approved this approach, but I think we need to look at it and see if it has been.
You know, I think that it will come out favorable when they do it. But, you know, at the same time, this stuff we just went through, we could have told them that was going to happen. And it did. But, I don't know. I have some other.
Hold on one second before you go into yours, Jerry. I want to hear them. But one more thing on that is the gas, their contracting policies for gas for their gas generating units.
Yeah, and Adam is looking into that.
Okay.
I was making a note of something else. Would you say that one again?
Their contracting policies or practices for gas to serve their gas generation units.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assuming those aren't firm contracts because I don't know that they can predict well enough to have them, but I would like to know how far in advance and what kind of contracts they're able to secure for those gas generation units.
Yeah. So, and like I said, Adam is looking into that somewhat. And they should be able to tell us all about their contracting, their hedging, and whatever stuff they're doing.
Yeah. Okay. So, sorry, Jerry, you had some more things.
Just because I want to make sure.
Hey.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Sorry about, I guess I'm destined to probably interrupt a little bit. Went joined remotely, so I apologize for that. But this has already been said. I'm fully on board with, you know, and I think the question is, you said, you know, the company said there are these significant energy savings. And I remember asking them when we were reviewing those, the wind additions, you know, is this everything? You know, does it include additional transmission? There was no mention at the time, I don't believe, of replacing the Sherco units early or retiring them early. So I think the answer is no, not everything was taken into account because it just doesn't make sense that they're showing up with a rate case of this magnitude when they talked about how much they would save. So, and then just one other point, or clarification maybe for me, or I like looking at February 12th through 18. I think those were the dates, Chair Fedorchak, that you mentioned.
I said February. I actually said February 5th because that's based on my recollection when it really started getting cold up here.
Okay. So the one thing on that, when they, you know, if they're going to show some data related to cost of generation during that time period, if they have those assets throttled back because they're not running at full capacity, that's going to skew the numbers and make them look uneconomical. So just that when they provide those numbers that, well, they're running at 40, 45% instead of 75 or 80, for example, they're going to look very uneconomical. So just a point to consider when we see those numbers.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. All right, Jerry, didn't you have some additional thoughts you wanted to ask about or mention?
Not so much thoughts as just I was looking through the case and just writing down things. And you probably already know most of this, but I'll go through it quickly if you want me to. First of all, they asked for $22.2 million or 10.8%. It's a 2021 test year. Their interim increase, which we've already done, was $16.3 million, or 7.92%. the depreciation for Sherco was an issue. I'm not real sure how good a job I did at trying to figure out exactly what they're doing, but I put down that they're asking for an additional $3.4 million test year increase from what it was in the last case of 2013. They claim that they have a decrease in sales and that that's largely from COVID. There was a lot of problems with COVID in the economy and stuff, and and so everything was slowed down. So because of all that, that means they're going to have less money. They're going to have less sales, and rates will go up more if you got less sales.
I just want to interrupt on that. I think that's something we really need to take a look at, because I assume different companies are going to have different results of that around the country, you know, based on the demographics of where they serve. But there's also some evidence that in some areas, some people are using more because they've been at home and so they weren't turning thermostats down or up depending on the season because they were at home working instead of at their offices. But the offices, like here, were still there and doing the same thing as normal. And so I guess I don't want to just offhandedly give them credit for, well, sales are going to be down now, when maybe the amount they're down is no more than what they've been going down the last few years.
Yeah, and they would have sales history that I would expect that staff consultant is looking into the actual costs and then the actual returns and how much did their sales go down and whether or not they believe what they're reading for the forecasts. Because now our test year is a forecasted test year, and I think we've had some changes in COVID too.
Yeah.
So, at a 10.2% ROE requested, which translates to a 7.35%. With their capital structure, which is 52% equity. they want to drop the RER, Renewable Energy Rider, and the Transmission Cost Rider into the rate base. So not saying they're going to get rid of the riders, but they want to put them in the regular rate base. So that's going to be a fair amount of money.
but Jerry, just for clarification, that's not included in the $22 million ask. That would be the $42 million ask, and with a $20 million roll-in for the transmission of renewable energy rider.
Okay, good point.
That includes, the $42 million includes riding, rolling in $20-some million up to
okay.
the riders. Yeah.
Good point. I missed that one. They had a lot of nuclear investment, significant upgrades and so forth. I got them down for an $8.3 million increase in capital investment compared to the 2013 test year. I've got them down for $2 million increase in decommissioning charges, too, for the increase in their decommissioning expenses. Wind, I'm not quite sure what all they did here, but I wrote down a $17.4 million increase compared to the 2013 test year, and an $11.18 million compared to 2019 actuals. Distribution, there's some kind of an increased investment in their distribution expenses. It was $6.5 million plus $1.6 million increased capital from 2013 and 2019 actual. And that's respectively. Expansion of distribution health program, whatever that was. I didn't get the number on it. If you remember last rate case, we had some incentive compensation going on. And they're back on that again, too. I don't have the exact numbers on them, but I think it was more than it was last time.
Okay.
And that's all I have wrote down.
That reminded me of one thing, Jerry, on the COVID stuff. I believe they wrote off a substantial amount of Minnesota customer arrearages.
Okay.
That were COVID related. And so I'd like to just have a report from them on what that is and if that was covered by their investors or how they are covering those costs. What the amount was, and $50 million comes to mind, but I could be off on that.
I remember that number too. I don't know if it's right or not. But
and if there's other arrearages that they've forgiven in other states that are part of our territory,
so
our integrated system. Mm-hmm.
So we asked staff to have their consultants look into that, maybe.
Okay, so you're dumb, Jerry.
Yeah.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay.
sorry.
Just wanted to give you a chance to jump in without interrupting if you wanted to.
Sorry, I don't have anything to throw at this immediate moment.
Okay, sounds good.
One thing that kind of goes along with this you were discussing, Julie, is I know you were you would like, and I'm going to try to paraphrase this so I know how to write this request to staff, the system cost comparison resulting from the approved wind additions to as a generation fleet. And I think, is that a good paraphrase?
Say it again.
A comparison of the actuals versus, okay, the cost comparisons from the wind additions.
Yeah, their projections from the ADP to the actuals to today.
Right, in from the previous ones that we approved. Okay.
Yeah, previous, the ADPs that we've approved, okay. they estimated or projected savings in those. So actuals to date, where are we as compared to the projections that they included in those ADP applications?
Okay. And another request that they had in their application, I think a number of requests were they are asking for the 187 megawatt solar portfolio to be added back in. If you remember, that was a denial.
Or the solar?
Yep, the solar was. And I know that advocacy staff will be looking at that, as I'm sure all these things, but it may be worthwhile just to have some discussion from advocacy staff or an evaluation of their resource mix that they were asking for cost recovery for, and a comparison with what would have been the North Dakota preferred generation mix.
Yeah.
You know, from the previous IRPs and our previous evaluations.
Yeah, I like that. The other thing that's in the works that they're going to need to be addressing and are I'm already planning to address are all the changes in the MISO resource adequacy process, and there's a fair number of changes coming down the pipe for that, and so it's kind of hard to know what to ask, but maybe even just a general report from them on, you know, what they anticipate happening in MISO and how they are prepared to address those upcoming changes at the, you know, lowest possible impact to customers. If that, you know, I guess that's as good as a way I can think of stating it. If you guys think of a better way.
Are those changes going to change now?
Well, I mean, it's evolving stuff, so it makes it difficult. But near as they can provide, you know, based on the current proposals, when they are filing, what are they seeing that might impact their plans? I'm assuming that they've got broad enough plans that it's not going to be substantial. But
when you say their plans, are you saying MISOs? Are we talking about NSPs?
I'm assuming NSP's Integrated Resource Plan is broad enough to address these MISO changes in a way that is not going to impact customers a lot. But I'd like to hear from them on that, and if they see any areas of significant concern, like they're going to lose a significant amount of accreditation in their thermal fleets, for example. If that's the case, I don't think it is, but if that's the case, then how are they going to address that? Then they have to buy more capacity, or should they not retire things as quickly as they're proposing? Are they looking at that? Or, you know, how about their wind facilities? Are they going to be impacted by the way these resources are being accredited? And are they going to have to bring on more resources at a higher cost to customers to meet their reserve margins, et cetera.
And Sherco.
Yeah.
You know, one item that they noted in their application and in their testimony was the notable amount of transmission being built to Minnesota and Iowa for wind projects, and I think those are all RTO project transmission projects. So I'm not sure if that's something you specifically would like staff to dig into is, I guess, the RTO transmission projects and the costs.
Yeah.
As part of their evaluation.
How much of that share for those costs is system-wide?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they could have a breakdown of those projects and which categories they are in. And because Adam and Jerry and I now understand all the different categories and how the costs are allocated for them. So it would be helpful to evaluate that and see how much of that is impacting our customers and how much. But we're going to be really busy with this rate case.
They have In their application, they mentioned the regional expansion transmission projects and an amount of $1.8
billion. See, it's hard for me to know if that's just a new category, if that's the annual, like that almost sounds like the MTEP for 2021 number, $1.8 billion.
It might be, but I don't think they know for sure what they're doing yet with that.
Yeah.
You know, one thing it would be good, I think, for advocacy staff to hear, because again, settlements happen. Are there any number of issues that you absolutely want to see visible, addressed, resolved in this rate case? Because a lot of times they'll get kind of, you know, black boxed or along with the costs and O&M expenses and part of the evaluation. Are there any specific issues that you absolutely want front and center to be resolved in this rate case?
I definitely think we need to talk about the retirement plans of those
units,
the Sherco units, and the nuclear as a commission.
Okay. We could deny that whole thing. Sorry, Sherco's denied.
Yeah. That would be the biggest one for me.
I think these are some suggestions that I hadn't really thought through as much that you pointed out, Julie, but I'm rephrasing them as I just tried to write things down quickly, but the description of the future of some of their dispatchable plants and how it will make sense, and then combining that with another one, the contracting policies for the gas in those generation plants. I think we're going to be answering to those things, so we might as well learn about them through this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can't speak to all the issues. Maybe there are some that are ripe for a settlement discussion, but so I don't want to say that I wouldn't entertain a settlement on some of the issues, but some of these bigger issues on the resource mix, the wind portfolio, how it's performing, we really need to have that conversation and not have that be part of a settlement.
Sure. And a lot of these things can be discussed even if a settlement is.
True.
Because they're not necessarily rate case,
value
issues. But, for example, their contracting policies and so forth. These are things that definitely can be brought in and discussed that probably wouldn't impact the ultimate settlement in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. And the cost of that transmission, too. I think we need to
transmission cost.
Shine light on that and really bring that to the forefront. So we understand, because there's going to be more costs moving forward in that area. So
sure. In the past, I know the commission has discussed, I know Jerry brought up those incentive plans and charitable donations and so forth. And we have addressed those in the past. I'm not sure if that's something that you would be concerned about seeing expressly disallowed or allowed outside of a black box settlement as well.
I'd be pretty offended if I didn't know about it and it was significant. If
sure.
It's a very insignificant amount, I guess I kind of trust staff to make judgment calls on that. But
okay.
Just across the board, I'm generally not a fan of building those into their rates.
Sure.
I think advocacy has, in the past, done a really good job on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect that they would continue to do that.
Sure.
I have a couple other points that I just want to add into this, but first I need a clarification. So when it comes to retirement of some of these plants, and so they want to accelerate their depreciation here, what are our options if they're going to close the plant? It seems like an incentive for them to do it up front to accelerate their depreciation. Yet if we don't, then it ends up being a cost for future customers that weren't even on the system when the plant was actually operational.
Sure.
So can we continue to spread those costs out over multiple years after it's closed if we choose to?
If I could, I think you could deny the whole thing. Not too many of them.
Okay.
And this is something that I'm not sure we want to extensively discuss, because this could be a very long discussion.
Yeah.
When we get to these issues, and quite honestly, it'd be great to have all the parties provide input and at that point really flesh it out.
But so then I think the answer I'm hearing, though, and really what I want, there are potentially alternatives, and so I think it's a big part of this case that I need to know more about. And the only other one I want to add, you've laid out, others have laid out pretty much everything that I had thought of and more, except the ROE and ROI. It seems like when I first came on the commission, these interest rates hadn't been so low for a very long time, and that could be just sort of an anomaly, and so these kinds of returns were just sort of the norm, and we continued assuming that other alternative investments were going to end up coming back up, and it stuns me that they don't. I don't know how it is that they don't, really, but I'm not an economist either, but they haven't been, and so I really, before, and this goes for the other rate case that we have before us too, before I keep approving these kinds of things, I want to know more about, what other jurisdictions are doing mm-hmm. with those. Are we starting to be on the high end of that kind of thing? I have a tough time justifying it to people when people on the outside hear of that and assume it's just a guarantee that they're going to get, which that part I can explain, but even why we're talking about 10% is tough to justify in today's investment world.
And that's usually part of the cost of capital evaluation and the testimony that's provided. If you do recall, I think it was Walmart, they provided a really nice overlay of all the surrounding states' ROEs. If you remember, it was actually a chart.
I didn't go through Walmart's
today.
No, not from a previous rate case.
Oh,
there's nothing yet, but maybe something like that that just can provide you more of a broad overview. And of course, Public Utilities Fortnightly always provides a publication, so that information is very easy to pull up as well for what's happening around the country as well as regional to our just neighboring states. We could provide something like that.
Yeah. I think the previous case one might be kind of dated already.
Sure.
But if that's what I'm looking for. So if it's quickly available on PUF or something like that, that would be...
Right. I was just saying the previous case for illustration for this case of what may be useful to you.
Yeah.
So we can bring something forward like that.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, do we have any more ideas, things to dig into?
Looks like we had a lot.
A few other simple things. Brian, you have any more thoughts to add before we close out?
No. Well, I do have, and I don't know how this fits in, but just thinking out loud, the allocation between customer classes, the current allocation, and it goes beyond the COVID COVID situation but just COVID in particular, I believe. Residential usage, when you look at utilities across the country, rose by 1.5 to 2%. So that we're not leaning on residential customers in the rate case. If the company saw a reduction, that's not because of the homeowner, and we've all talked about that all for the last 4 or 5, 6 months anyway with COVID. So, and I think we're all on the same page. The other part of the elephant that's really curious to me, the push to green energy that the company is pursuing has been in part, and a significant part, driven by corporate America that want to say we have, you know, green energy to produce our goods, services, operate our stores. So that really is a driver when you look at you know, where revenues for a company like Xcel or others come from. So I think we have to be cognizant that, you know, whether residential customers like it or don't like it, to some extent they're along for the ride. And it's not always a favorable ride when it sharply increases rates. So I'm just trying to think if there is a way for the company to justify the current allocation, defend it when, again, one of the drivers in the company is choosing to go down this path, you know, 100% carbon-free by 2050. You know, a big part of that's being driven by you know, what corporate America wants. So do we have it right in the allocation front, I guess, would be the point. And I don't know how to approach that with the company exactly at this time, but it's a thought that I've had for a while now. Just wanted to throw that out.
Good. All right. Jack?
One thing that might be beneficial, and this is more of just how we'll go forward with these recommendations, that advisory staff can write these up. We'll provide a list for you, and you guys can review them and actually at the next commission, one of the next couple commission meetings, approve them. The nice thing in this rate case relative to the other one where we had this discussion and these recommendations is that it's early enough that they still can probably be worked into testimony for some parties or rebuttal testimonies or for and provided even prior to the proceeding for, you know, to aid you guys in discussion as we move into it. And so I don't know how you feel about that, Pat, but maybe we could actually provide something formal in the docket related to this so the companies and parties can look at them.
That's fine. I was just thinking, you know, like advocacy's here. They're writing down everything that is mentioned today.
Sure.
And I don't know if the company's listening in, but what you're suggesting would be beneficial for the company.
Sure.
And for the interveners.
Well, I guess the one thing I thought it'd be beneficial for the commissioners because they get to see how we wrote up these issues. Yeah. And so we're not addressing them or couching the recommendations or their concerns in the manner that they feel comfortable with. They'd have an opportunity to change them
before
they sent out. That's my one thought with it.
That's a good reason for producing the list. It isn't necessarily the reason for docketing.
Sure.
So when are the hearings for this again?
We have not said it yet.
No,
we haven't.
Not yet.
No, I think we're generally looking to, and Jerry, you can speak to this. I saw the emails June or July. Is that right?
Yeah, and if it was June, it would be really like late June.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, let's get the list and go from there.
Sounds good.
All right. Last chance. Anybody have anything? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you.